Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Last week, I taught at Columbia University, and part of our discussion dealt with how do small business leaders learn to ask for help? Well, the answer is many of them don't, and worse, neither do their employees. Here to talk about a new technology startup that makes it easy to ask for and give help at work is Larry Fried. Larry, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be with you guys.
Tell us the name of your company, how it works, and a little bit of your background, and finally your website.
Sure. My name is Larry Fried. My background has been in technology early on, and then started a tech company back in 2001 called 4C, where we measured customer experience. And I exited that company at the end of 2013 after someone acquired us. And the company now is called Give and Take. It can be found on the web at www.giveandtakeinc.com. And our product is called Give a Talk. And Give a Talk is about really connecting people and knowledge to drive both business results and employee engagement. And the real focus is on taking the principles of creating a giving culture, and as you mentioned in the opening, giving employees a way to ask for help, and really reducing that stigma of asking for help and making it very easy and efficient for others to provide help. And those are really the two driving visions that we have with our product and what we're striving to improve in the workplace.
And your website?
The website is giveandtakeinc.com. And the product is really focused on reducing that stigma of asking for help. So many of us, as we grew up in corporate America, we all sort of came along with this idea that, you know, don't go to your boss with a problem, go to your boss with a solution. Often people feel that if they have to reach out to others in their organization for help, it's a sign of weakness. You know, they don't often even know who to ask for help, and that presents a real problem. Now, reality is, I believe very strongly that it's actually a great sign of strength to ask for help, not a sign of weakness, because I'm putting the task I have in front of me, the company, the customers, far more important than my own personal ego of not knowing what the right answer is. And so, you know, we've always, as an individual, as a leader at other companies, I've always applauded people that ask for help. But I believe that the norm is that people are somewhat reluctant to reach out to their colleagues or even know who to reach out to ask for help. So the benefit and the vision and purpose behind Givitas, our platform, is to really create a safe environment for people to be able to ask for help. So, you know, we take a number of steps to do that. The first, it's an environment that is all about seeking help and giving help. And so you're never the first person to raise your hand and ask for help. And you see what other kinds of help people are asking for. So a lot of the emotional and mental barriers that you may face in asking for help are overcome because you can see how other people are reaching out to others in their community to ask for help and how they're getting that help from their coworkers.
That's an awful lot. Dan, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dan.
Let me play a little bit of devil's advocate. Don and I are both serial entrepreneurs and started many businesses, almost all of them successful. And as a person who started up a business, by and large, I'm making a broad statement here, but I believe it to be true, that entrepreneurs, and especially serial entrepreneurs, if they've been successful, know it all. They have egos bigger than Mount Everest. And so the idea that a serial entrepreneur would admit that he doesn't know the solution to a problem is a big, it must indicate that they've got a horrendous problem and they have no idea what to do with it. They've never experienced it. So how do you address, first of all, the egomaniacs who are serial entrepreneurs who think they already know everything?
Yeah, it's a great point. And there's a lot of people in this world that think they know everything. And generally, you know, while many of them have had success, many of them eventually either start to face those challenges and their approach to it changes quite a bit. I have always thought, and I'm not alone in this, but great leadership is about people that leaders that do ask for help and are not that know-it-all. Because if you're leading an organization, whether it be five people or whether it be 50,000 people, and you give across that attitude that I know everything, that I'm the guy with all the right answers, it really creates a problem within the culture of the organization. And what happens is people underneath you start giving you the answers that they think you want to hear. They become those yes men that don't really make you feel good maybe, but don't really do any good for your organization. I've always felt as a leader, I want to hear the things that I don't know from my team, not the things I already know. So don't even try to come up with the answers you think I want to hear. Tell me what you know. Tell me what you think. And so while it is true, a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, do have that attitude, I think those are generally going to be people that build small businesses. And I, as an entrepreneur, my goal was always not to build a small business, to build a business that will become a larger business. And I know I can't do it alone. I know I don't have all the answers. I need to reach out to my colleagues, my peers, my team, and ask for help. And I need them to be asking for help as well. So even if I do think I'm that know-it-all and have all the answers, I want the people on my team to not be afraid to ask for help. So I better lead by example and set the stage and be one that reaches out to my team and says, okay, guys, I need help. How do we do this? Because that really creates the culture of an organization that can build and grow and be dynamic and really set the world on fire.
Okay, I'm going to make myself the bad guy, and I'm going to give you an actual personal experience of my own, and then you can tell me what I did wrong.
Okay.
I was a broker for Merrill Lynch in Columbus, Ohio. Very
well,
successful.
That's the first wrong thing you did, Columbus, Ohio.
No, I was very successful.
I'm a University of Michigan grad, so.
Okay, well, that's Columbus.
Just well, joking.
And, you know, and I think we have a better record against that team up north than that team up north has against Ohio State. But that's for another
Absolutely.
Program.
Absolutely, in football, yes.
Yeah, that's another program. I was very successful in Merrill Lynch building my own small business as a broker and was asked to go to New York to work in a product area. And I eventually, in a relatively short period of time, was asked to take over as the product manager for Merrill Lynch for this particular product line. And our business grew from $95 million in annual sales in 3 years to $1.3 billion. We were a very successful business. And I had people, when I came on board, who were constantly in my office, staff people who were constantly asking, office because they were talking to brokers all over the country and trying to answer questions brokers had about the product that we were marketing. And they would come to me and they'd say, well, what do you think I should do? And I would answer the question. And after about 4 months of not only answering the question, but beginning to hear the same questions over and over again, I turned around and said to them, you tell me what you think you should do. Because I didn't feel that they were growing in their knowledge of the product and the solutions if they constantly relied upon the boss to answer their questions for them. And what happened was, initially, they were kind of shocked that I wasn't going to answer the questions. And I said, if you got something that's really crazy sophisticated, I'll be happy to help you. But regular situations, we've had enough training, we've had enough conversations, you should be able to answer those questions on your own. And they came back only when they had something, really something that they had never heard about before. So I was saying to them, don't reach out for help. Use your own skill and your own knowledge base of what you've been doing for a number of years and test your ability to recall the solutions to the problems. Call on me when you've got a serious problem. Was I wrong in doing that?
No, not at all. And to a great extent, our Givitas platform would have sped that process up for you. And let me explain that. So you became the expert. You became the crutch for these folks because One, I think environments have changed in the workplace a lot, you know, from, you know, when you and I were, you know, starting out to where they are now. But, you know, they were going to you because you were the guy in charge, and they wanted, you know, ultimately for you to have that responsibility if something went wrong. You became that crutch. You had the answers, and they weren't really in the learning mode. They were in the take direction mode. So, you know, the expert model works, but ends up wasting a lot of the expert's time, right? You were spending a lot of time answering questions that they really should have known themselves, and both you and them could have spent your time more efficiently. Mm-hmm. But imagine if you can very easily and efficiently harness the knowledge of the entire network, the whole team that's there. And so, you know, someone, let's just say Joe, comes and asks you a question, and you give him that question, you give him that answer, and he now knows what to do, and he goes off and does it. The next time when Rob has that problem, he's going to come to you as well. But what if Rob asked the network? What if Rob was able to ask the team very efficiently, not seeking out Joe, but was able to ask the network and let the network help him? Joe now is going to say, wow, I just had that issue 3 days ago, and Dan helped me out. Hey, Rob, here's the answer. Right now you're harnessing the collective intelligence. And so, you know, the idea of the expert and being able to find the expert and ask them for help, you know, is sometimes easy or seems easy, but at the end of the day, then the expert isn't getting his job done because all he's doing is answering the same questions over and over. And
Bingo.
The group isn't really learning. They're not being tested to learn. And by using the network as a tool for everybody, I think that the learning gets spread throughout that organization much faster.
Yeah, I mean, we grew a business from, as I said, $95 million in sales to $1.3 billion in 3.5 years. We were smoking, and we didn't have a lot of time to waste. And we were adding people, but it was at times a nightmare and a huge management challenge of how do you continue to support at that time 10,000 brokers, all of them clamoring for what you have to sell and selling it and not being able to get answers. Let's go back to
right.
Don's original question to you about the class he taught at Columbia, where the business leaders are reluctant to ask for help. And I'm curious, we talked a little bit about entrepreneurs because of ego, but are there other reasons why business leaders don't ask for help?
Yeah, there are. And there's a couple of reasons, and it's obviously not the same for everybody. One, there's this concept that if I ask, I'm weak, right? I don't know the answers, and others may take advantage of it. So that plays into it. The second thing that plays into it is often I don't even know who to ask, so I have to expose myself to multiple people, my weakness. And then the third thing that plays into this is if I ask you and you help me, I feel like that I owe you, or you may feel like that I owe you, right? Adam Grant in his book Give and Take, which came out in 2013 and was a business bestseller and has really changed the way a lot of people think about the culture in their organizations, you know, really focused on this. And it identified three different types of folks: givers, takers, and matchers. And the givers are the people that help others. They get pleasure out of it. It's more of the pay it forward concept. I'm going to help you, and down the road, someone's going to help me, right? Takers are those that ask for help and take things but really don't want to provide it back. Often they're very competitive. Often it's all about winning, you know, whether, you know, when you're in business, your brokers at Merrill Lynch is an example, they win if they have success getting customers, but often the competition between them drives them more, right? They don't want to be the bottom guy in the totem pole. Those guys often get let go. They want to strive to be the top guy. You can do that in a productive way or you can do it in a negative way. The takers have a tendency to do it not in a productive way, but often in a negative way. And then there's the matchers, the third category. And this is more of a very specific reciprocity. So you do something for me, I'll do something for you, even exchange, right? But often the people that can help you may not need help from you, right? They may be more experienced, more senior, more knowledgeable, have a better network, right? And then there are other people that need help from you and want to take advantage of your knowledge and experience. So the matching approach isn't nearly as effective. But if we can create that giving culture and that giving community, it's really about, you know, not only improving productivity, improving bottom line results, it's about improving employee engagement because people build stronger relationships. They start to feel like they're in a place of trust where they can expose their weaknesses and others will help them, and they'll in turn help other people. And ultimately, that's good for the company, right? It's about putting the company and your customers first. So if I don't know the right answer, is the company and the customer better off by me faking it or by me going and getting that right answer? I think it's always the latter. If I can go and get that right answer, everyone's better off. And it also makes me smarter, makes me more knowledgeable and more valuable to the organization. So from my perspective, it ends up becoming a win-win, but it is a little bit of a change in culture from what we experienced 10 and 20 and 30 years ago. You know, now we're in an environment where collaboration and communication and culture are really three key things for businesses to grow and be successful and thrive.
You know, it's very keen insight. I continue to manage money, and I told a client recently that my style of managing money and my relationship with my clients makes me a dinosaur, because the things that I do today for my clients, I've done for the 40 some years that I've been in the business, and nobody does them anymore. Nobody comes to your house, sits down and talks to you about what's going on with your money. If you want them, you have to go to their office. You have to make appointments. You have to, they probably don't call you. You have to call them. And that whole relationship has changed from the time that I started in production in the early 1970s. But I'm in a business situation right now where I'm helping a startup. And I've got very, very smart people involved in the startup, but in certain facets of the business, they have virtually no experience whatsoever. And I find that really hard to try and educate them about things that they know nothing about and don't understand why they're important to be able to do certain things. And they're very much into the technology and the technique of how the business works, process works, as opposed to understanding how you build the business, the infrastructure that you need, the services that you need to develop, marketing stories, what is the message, branding. I'm amazed at the level of expertise of these people. They really have no clue. And these aren't young people. These are people in their 50s who have been around in other businesses but just don't understand what's going on. So the challenge is, how do you communicate to people a level of experience that you have to a level of experience that they don't have?
Yeah, I've experienced similar things. You know, after selling 4C and you know, I spent a couple years, about 3 years, 3.5 years, advising, mentoring startups, sitting on some early stage and mid stage tech companies boards, and often, you know, people starting a company again are really afraid to show their weakness, especially around the board table and the investors. And again, it's negative, right? The investors and the board members and the mentors are there to help you. And, you know, there's nothing, if you've never experienced an issue, you know, your chance of having the right answer is not very good. If you can rely on people that have had those experiences, and often they're more than willing to help, and enjoy helping, right? They enjoy giving back and contributing to others. And we often see a lot of people that don't take advantage of that. It is way harder to ask for help than it is to give help. And that's, you know, one of the big challenges, right? How can we create an environment, whether it be with a startup and his board, or whether it be in a large organization and their leadership, how can we create that culture and environment where asking for help is seen as a norm and seen as a positive? And there's ways to do it. One of the things our product does, and this is obviously more applicable to the medium-sized and larger companies, is provides a lot of analytics around the people that are the givers, the people that are asking for help, and so on, so that the leadership can actually look at those people and say, wow, this guy helps other people. That's what I want in my leader of my company, right? I don't want a guy that's a one-man show, that's the expert that knows it all. That's not scalable. That's not a great leader. I want the people that collaborate and work together. So I think there are ways to sort of change the norm, but not everyone's going to embrace it. One of the benefits of the platform, Givitas, is that it makes it easier, even if you're a taker or a matcher, as I described before. There's reasons you're still going to play in this game, because it's not a one-to-one relationship. So often often the takers are people that want to look great to everybody else. They want to be the guys on top of the heap. They want to show no weakness and only strength. So when other people ask questions, they actually start to look good, and it strokes their ego to be able to be the guy that can come in and help them. And so we're actually seeing a phenomenon where, you know, I'm not saying we're changing these takers into givers, but based on the fact that this is transparent to the team, to the network that's participating, they want to start to show off, and that's ultimately good for everybody. So they may not, we may not have shifted their culture, but we sort of get them to exhibit the behaviors of a giver, even if they don't think of themselves as a giver, and that can be powerful.
So if a small businessman, an entrepreneur, has got a business that it's kind of slowed down and he can't figure out what's going on, and historically he or she have been reluctant to ask for help, what are two or three things that this entrepreneur can do from a standpoint of self-examination to say, you know, I really do have a problem and I need to do this? So are there any points that you can give our listeners that would help them understand where they are and why they need help?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one of the words you used in there is part of the answer, self-examination. I've always felt it was really important in my experience, both in large companies and then as an entrepreneur, to be very self-critical of myself. And would always, you know, I always had this saying, we're going to learn a whole lot more from our losses than our wins. And it's just a mindset to say, what could I have done better? Even when we have a win, what could I have done better? You know, could I have struck a better contract? Could I have built a stronger relationship? Could I have used that person for a referral for other people? And to keep striving to make yourself better. That self-examination is really critical to being able to improve, but also to be able to identify your weaknesses. So, you know, the first hurdle you got to get over when you're having challenges is to realize that you're having those challenges. And unless you really look back at yourself and really examine what you did and how your team is doing it, you may walk away and blame everybody else, right? I'm not growing because of the economy. I'm not growing because of my competitor. I'm not growing because, you know, this isn't fair to me, right? It's really easy to come up with those answers. But what could you have done as an individual or as a company or as a team to make that successful? And when you start probing and look for that sort of continuous improvement and continuous self-examination, I think that in itself is what starts to tip you to the side of you know, hey, I think I got a problem here. If I don't know the answer, I'm going to find someone that can help me. I'm going to go talk to people that have experienced this before. I'm going to reach out to my network and my peers and my colleagues and my team and anybody I can find and say, hey, have you any ideas on how to take over this challenge and to be successful? And, you know, the sum of the parts should always be better than the individual pieces. So if I can get knowledge and information from everybody else, they may not give me the right answer, but they may make me think about my problem differently, which may lead me to getting that right answer. So I think, you know, my tips for anybody, but especially the small business, the entrepreneur, is, you know, look hard at yourself. You know, while there are things that we can't control, you know, regulation, the global economy, you know, taxes, even what our competitors are doing, we absolutely can take action if we're smart and make the best of it and optimize our own situation. But we only can do that is if we look really, really hard at ourselves. So self-examination and being really self-critical, I think, is step one. I think step two is then identifying your weakness and your challenges. And then step three is to reaching out to others to ask for help. And again, you'll never know what kind of help you can get unless you ask. And we've seen incredible stories from saving, you know, tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of dollars to saving people's lives to experiencing, you know, things that you never would have thought you'd be able to experience because you asked for help. And you don't, when you can have a network or an environment where you can ask a group of people instead of one individual, the power just gets magnified.
So one more thought and then I'll give it back to Don. This is not intended to be sexist, but informational. Are women better at asking for help than men?
I think generally they are, and I don't have any research at my fingertips that would tell me that. But I think women have generally And again, don't, as with you, don't want to be sexist at all. I think women are generally better at asking for help, and their egos don't often get in way as much as it does with sometimes with men. You know, that old stereotype of the man has all the answers is obviously not true at all. It's not true in my house. I know that. And it's not true in most of the companies I've been involved in, but sometimes people have that stereotype that they're trying to fit into, and it makes them a little bit more reluctant to ask for help.
Women might be more predisposed to ask, but are they any better at implementing than men when they get the answer?
I'm not sure it's a male versus female issue really, as much as it's more of a little bit of being comfortable in your own skin and being aware, self-aware that you don't know everything. And again, I think the biggest thing is if you look at life as it's a sign of strength to ask for help, not a sign of weakness. I think that applies to so many parts of your life, whether it be business, professional, you know, people that are struggling with addictions and challenges in their personal life. Asking for help is a lot of how you have a chance to overcome that. You know, and in the business side, you know, nobody knows the answer to everything. So asking for help is so critical. And, you know, the saying, it takes a community to raise a child. It takes a, you know, you hear these, that saying applied to so many things. It takes a village to build a company. It takes a village to, you know, to make people successful. I think is really, really true. And what's crazy that we don't even think about is most people really do like to give help. They like to give it for a couple of, probably three reasons. One is it makes them feel good. Two is the gratitude they get from other people when they do give help. And three is that, you know, it can actually significantly improve their reputation as well.
Good. Thank you, Larry. Back to you, Don.
I always appreciate listening. Sometimes get caught short. I guess my question at this point revolves around, how do you make money?
How do we make money as a company? Mm-hmm. We're selling the Givitas platform, aiming at enterprises and companies, of probably 100 people and up, you know, where it makes sense for a product like ours. And we charge a per user per year licensing fee to use the product, to use the platform.
Well, I firmly believe in what you're doing because in my generation, it was always you helped each other. And as I'm listening to you, I was thinking back about the people that have helped me over time. And I think you're so right. It's a great product needed in this time of what I sometimes believe is great selfishness. Your website again?
It's www.giveandtake, so GIVEANDTAKE, inc.com.
How'd you come up with the title?
So it's based on Adam Grant's book, Give and Take, and Adam Grant, who's a professor at Wharton and a best-selling business author, along with Professor Wayne Baker, who's a University of Michigan professor, really founded the company, along with Wayne's wife, Cheryl Baker, who had developed some of the early on concepts. And the three of them co-founded the company and called the Give and Take, really in recognition of the principles of creating a sharing, giving culture that Adam talks about so much in his book, Give and Take. And so we agreed that was the right point to a right name for the company. The product name is called Givitas, G-I-V-I-T-A-S. And it's the combination of two words, the combination of the word giving and the combination of the word civitas, which means a community. So it's about a platform that can help you create and enable that giving community within your organization.
We've been talking with Larry Fried. A link to his website will be on Recalculating Biz tonight. You can hear this program and every other program Dan and I have done on recalculating.biz.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit costs. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz. I want to tell you about Bob Bethel. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. Dan Perkins with your featured book.
Dan, our next guest is Russ Kumborowski. His company is all about how important good design on logos, websites, packaging and all associated small business activities are so key to success. Ross, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here talking to your listeners.
Well, first, Ross, tell us a little bit about your background and then what your website does and how it could really help small business.
Sure. I was an attorney for 13 years, trial attorney focusing on intellectual property and complex litigation, I was a partner in a mid-sized firm, redesigning the firm's site, and like most businesses, needed to hire an outside agency to help us. We went through this typical request for proposal process, which was just very difficult for us. We had a tough time, invested a significant effort, and paid a lot of money, but didn't get good results. And in frustration 10 years ago, I went home and said, there's got to be a better way for entrepreneurs and business owners to buy design services. So logos, websites, print design, product design. And in the process of researching, I came up with this idea for CrowdSpring. So today, 10 years later, CrowdSpring has a community of over 210,000 designers and namers all over the world, helping tens of thousands of the world's best small businesses and entrepreneurs, agencies with logo design, web design, print design, product design, and even naming companies and products.
And the name of your website and how people can reach you?
CrowdSpring, CrowdSpring.com, CrowdSpring.com.
If anybody's interested, an intern from Ross's company provided an article to recalculating.biz, which is will be available tonight. But before we go further, Ross, what are the key elements that you found that make it so important to have good design in your products, the logo, et cetera?
Well, if you think about it, you have to get branding right with your business, because if your brand is weak, every single thing you do as a company will suffer. And branding is about awareness. It's the degree to which your customers or prospects can recall your company and know what it's about. So if a customer doesn't recognize your brand, doesn't know you, it's completely irrelevant to them. And the problem for businesses for many, many years has been that it costs a lot of money to get a good brand. So you're paying thousands or tens of thousands of dollars to get a name and a logo. And this is something that we wanted to disrupt. When we created CrowdSpring, we wanted to change that and free businesses from high prices and the lack of choice. So on CrowdSpring, you can get started for as little as $299. That includes all of our fees. It's 10 to 50 times less than you would working with an individual freelancer. And ultimately, it's about building a strong presence. So a lot of business owners will come up with a simple name when they start a business, which is, by the way, a really hard thing to do. But the name won't really communicate much about their business. They may not have the same URL. I don't know how many business owners I've talked to who operate under one name, but the URL on the internet for them is different. And if you think about as customers, when we want to look for a product for Apple.com, for Apple, for example, we go to Apple.com. We can't remember the difference between names and URLs. The other big problem we saw is people that just didn't invest much in good design in their business. And so their logos looked like they were created by a high school student, or oftentimes looked just like the logo of 1,000 other businesses in their market or different markets. And if you think about it, it's hard to differentiate yourself if your brand looks just like somebody else. Customers have no idea how to find you, and if they find you, have no idea how you differentiate. So it's really about using good branding, using good techniques, starting with your name, which is an important part of your brand, continuing with your logo, which is really a critical part of communicating what you do to your customers, and making that early investment. And as I said earlier, great design doesn't have to cost thousands or tens of thousands of dollars.
That's interesting. But how do you choose the designer? I mean, different designers have different styles. How do you go about doing it?
So that's a very smart question, and it's actually the struggle that I went in through 10 years ago. A traditional business owner has to look through portfolios and look to see the work the designer did previously. And when I struggled as a business owner, I said there's got to be a better way, and CrowdSpring created the better way. So here's the difference. On CrowdSpring, you don't pick from bids and proposals. You set your own price, and designers submit actual designs. So if you're looking for a new logo for a business, rather than having 10 designers bid to create a logo for you, you set your own price, $200, $300, and 30, 40 designers will submit 100 logo designs for your new business. You're not choosing a designer, you're choosing the logo. It's like shopping for a television or a pair of jeans in the store. As consumers, we know what we like when we see it, but we have a hard time buying services because we don't get the results until some later period. So on CrowdSpring, you choose your favorite design from among 100 different designs rather than trying to figure out which designer you're going to work with and then hopefully get something good. We also give you the opportunity to work one-on-one with individual designers, so we don't take that away if that's how you want to do it. But the big game changer was letting business owners choose their favorite designs as opposed to trying to figure out which designer might create a good design. There's too much risk involved in the traditional process.
Dan, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you. Welcome, Ross.
Thank you.
Fascinated. I am literally in the throes of starting a couple of new businesses and struggling with brand. I've used an organization called Fiverr. I don't know whether you're familiar with them or not, and went through the process that you talked about. And fortunately enough, found an illustrator for my children's book who was absolutely terrific and who really, really sold me on why she should be the illustrator for my books. But I've never done brand, and what are the things that I need to be thinking about if I'm starting a new business and I'm going to do branding? I understand the importance of branding, but what are the things that you think we should be thinking about when we're talking about branding our company, our new company?
Well, the first thing is ultimately to be sure that you think about the beginning. So you're doing it correctly. When you think about a new business, the first thing that happens is you create a brand. And I mentioned earlier, it starts with a name for the company and a logo. And these are two important components. So today you need a name and a domain so that people can find you online. And one of the unique things about naming projects on CrowdSpring, as an example, is that people suggest hundreds of possible names for your business and available domains. So you get a name and a domain as part of that package. What does that really mean? What does branding mean? It means that you need to figure out what level of investment you want to create. Now, Fiverr, the example you use for illustration, can be hit and miss. It might be good for certain small illustrations, but the challenge is, you know, a lot of Fiverr projects are $5, $10, $20. You know, can you really get a good brand from a designer who's spending a few minutes designing a $5 logo? In our experience, when we talk to our clients who may have tried that before, it's really very difficult to do because branding requires a bit more than just slapping a graphic together. And what we found in the less expensive sites like Fiverr, a lot of people are selling you not really a unique brand, but an element of a design that they've sold to hundreds or thousands of other clients. So if your company is selling merchandise or selling a service and it looks just like 100 or 1,000 other companies doing different things or selling the same merchandise or service, you have a problem because you can't differentiate yourself from other people. So that's really an important distinction, which is why we feel like there's got to be a sweet spot, and we think we found it. You don't have to pay $10,000 to create a brand, but it's also typically a mistake to pay $5, $10 because you're not creating a brand, you're creating a very temporary problem for you. It's interesting that rebranding is much more expensive than branding right in the first place. So let me tell you why that's important. So if you think about logos as an example, it takes mm-hmm. people just 10 seconds to form a first impression of a brand's logo. So in the first 10 seconds when people see a logo, they're going to decide whether they think you're a trustworthy brand, whether they think you're a professional brand or somebody running a company in their basement that doesn't know what they're doing. And that's a pretty short amount of time. It takes about 5 to 7 impressions for people to recognize a logo. So they have to see it in different contexts. It may be in the paper, it may be online, it may be on your van, it may be on the store if you have a store. The thing is that if you look at the overall statistics, companies that have a strong design, so a strong brand and a strong design in their marketing materials, outperform other companies more than 2 times. So if you got a business and you're struggling to figure out how to grow it, the data seems to be consistently show that by investing in your brand, by investing in good design, you should be able to increase your revenue and ultimately your profits more than 2x by making that investment. These have been studies that have been looking at companies over the past decade of all different sizes. And at the end of the day, if you think about specific elements of design, take websites, for example, almost half of the people who are surveyed say that the website design of a business was the number one factor to determine the credibility of that business. So when you think about this initial business you're building, you need a name, you need a logo. A lot of times people will create an initial website for their business, and oftentimes they'll just slap something together without thinking much about it. But half of your customers are making their decision whether to buy from you strictly based on your name, your logo, and how your website looks, which means it's not a decision that you should make lightly.
So at this moment, let me have you repeat, what is your website?
Crowdspring.com, CrowdSpring.com.
So let me continue the discussion about logo and brand recognition. Having never done this with anybody, only working with an illustrator, what kind of information do you, let's just step back for a second. If I come to your website and I'm interested in having a brand identification, a logo, maybe a masthead for stationery, website masthead, what kind of information do I need to have available to distribute, and how many people do you think you'll be able to get interested in possibly working with me?
So first of all, we have been doing this for 10 years and are experts at walking you through a questionnaire that asks you for information about your business, about your customers, and about things that you like and don't like. So if you post a logo project, for example, we ask about 11, 12 questions. We ask for the colors that you like. We ask to learn a little bit about your business, about your customers and the products or services you're selling. We ask you about some of your preferences. And then we ask you about your budget. So as I said, projects start at $299, including all fees, which is 10 to 50 times what it would traditionally cost. When the project posts, we broadcast it to our entire community. And typically you'll have 20 to 30, sometimes more designers working simultaneously in your project, submitting designs for your review. So in a typical logo project, you'll look at 100 plus actual designs of the logo for your business. That's a very different experience than if you were to post in a traditional marketplace where you explain what you need. And by the way, they don't tell you how to explain it. They just ask you, post whatever your requirements are, which is really difficult. We actually take you step by step through that process. If you post in a traditional marketplace, you're going to have people submitting bids and proposals and showing you their resumes, but it's going to take hours for you to figure out who you want to work with, and then there's still a risk whether they're going to create something you like. So CrowdSpring turns this on its head. It puts you in the driver's seat and gives you the chance to pick from actual designs, working with dozens of designers at the same time. You give feedback back and forth. They iterate on those designs. We protect everything with a customized, free legal agreement, transferring the intellectual property to you. We take care of paying the designers. We take care of the intellectual property contract. All of the project management takes place on site. We give you the ability to launch free focus groups. So if you wanted to test these designs with your family, with your colleagues, with your customers, with your social media friends on Twitter or Facebook, you can easily, it takes minutes to launch these focus groups to give you the best result possible.
So what's the lead time? How long will I have to work to come up with a conclusion of a artist that I'm interested in working with?
Ultimately, up to you. The typical project runs 7 days, so you can have a ready design within 7-8 days after you post it. But we have projects that can run a single day, so you can post a project where your turnaround is 24 hours. We'll sometimes find that people are under a deadline and they've been working with another designer who just hasn't been able to come up with the right designs. And so they'll come to us because they're getting ready to go to a show or an event, maybe a Chamber of Commerce event, where they just need to have their final design. So these are rush projects. We have designers in 195 countries, a huge community, 210,000 of them. And so it's easy for us to respond to quick projects. So you can do 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, 7 days, the typical project. If you need a little more time, we give you a little bit more time. Once you pick your favorite design, we take you to a private project wrap-up where you review proofs and final designs, but those can go as quickly as you're able to approve things. So ultimately, our clients in a rush can, within 24 to 36 hours, walk away with finished designs.
So if I start and I decide what I need to do is to, should I start with a logo first, and then that logo then turns into a masthead, which turns into a website masthead, and they're all tied together?
Yes. So ultimately, if you already have a name, then the logo is first, because the logo is going to give you some brand direction. It'll give a design style that will inform everything else. So one of the important things about branding is consistency. You want your brand to be consistent across every medium in which you communicate. So if we think about brands that we love, whether it's Apple or Tesla, they're consistent. The logo looks the same. The colors they use are the same. And you want to do that with your own brand. So logo project first. And once you have that established with the colors and the design styles, then you can go into, website design or masthead design and whatever else, marketing materials, whatever else you need. And you can do it one of two ways. Oftentimes, you can just launch a private project with the same designer who did your logo. We allow you to negotiate the price that you want to offer, and if the designer accepts it, you go into a private project. You get access to all of the same tools, all of the project management, all of the file transfers. You still get a legal contract transferring all the intellectual property rights to you. We take care of all the hard stuff like paying the designer, and you do it on our platform. So you can work privately with that designer on future projects, or you can continue to work in the crowdsourcing manner, which is post another project and open it up to the bigger community of designers.
So if I start with the logo and I'm really happy with it, and I want to go now, I want to do a web design using the same logo, Am I likely to get pushback from designers that say, well, I don't really like the logo. I think you really should do this.
No. Well, first of all, keep in mind that different kinds of designers have different skills. So it's very unusual for logo designers to also be competent in designing websites. And it's unusual for website designers to be good brand designers. So when you post a web project and you say, I need a web design, here are the, and again, we take you through a questionnaire. So we have over 30 different project categories. And we've done this for big sophisticated companies like LG and Barilla, Microsoft, we're on significant projects. So we have a lot of experience working with sophisticated businesses and also, you know, small one-person, two-person operations. We take you through a questionnaire, ask you what you like, what you don't like. Our web designers would take your logo and use that as the basis for the color scheme and the basis of the design style. Obviously, you will have some input into that as well, because that's part of what we do in our questionnaires, is we try to get from you some information on the kinds of styles that you like. So maybe some competitors, maybe some people that are not competitors, but you like those styles. And so we do an interview, and then our designers pick it up and take it from there. So, you know, the beauty in website projects, much like in logos, is you're looking at dozens of different website designs for your business. It's not just looking at random website designs. It's website designs for your business, and you pick your favorite.
So if I start out with a logo, it could be $200 to $300.
Yes.
Okay. And how much of the $200 to $300 does the artist get?
So the $299 price point, the artist gets $200.
Okay. And as the project expands, do they get a smaller or greater percentage of the fee?
So it depends. Like, to give you an example, in a website project, if you're looking for a small website, those start at $899. Websites are more complicated. They require much more work and obviously are more involved. So $899 is the starting point for websites. That's still 10 to 50 times less than the traditional market. Of that $540 goes to the designers. So we give the bulk of these awards to the designers. And we've, over the past 10 years, we've spent a lot of time talking to our community about the pricing, and we want to be sure that we set fair prices. So it's one reason why we've chosen not to be the cheapest, because ultimately we find that there is no way that we can deliver quality to our clients. At the end of the day, a customer that wants to save $100 and pay $20 as opposed to $200 for a logo is going to find themselves at a huge disadvantage, because they will find that they will need to rebrand 6 months, 12 months after they start. And that process is immensely expensive, because you have to redo all your merchandise, your business cards, your letterhead. Your brand has been in online and in publications, and that process costs an insane amount of money. And so what we typically, and I talk to thousands of entrepreneurs every year, and I mentor a bunch of them through several programs. What I tell them at the beginning is, you know, invest a few hundred dollars early and do it right. Because if you do it wrong initially, it'll save you a few bucks on day one, but it'll cost you a lot 6 months after.
Okay. I got another question, then I'll turn it back to Don. So where are the bulk of your designers? Are they overseas or are they domestic?
They're split. So about 50% of our designers are in the United States, and the other half is in the rest of the world. They come from, as I mentioned earlier, 195 different countries. And ultimately, on your projects, you'll have a mix of all of them participating. That you may have a healthy mix from the U.S., you may have a healthy mix from overseas.
Do you decide who the bids go out to? Or is it a bid board and anybody can respond?
So in our normal projects, we actively promote these projects to our entire community. If you post a one-to-one project, so sometimes We have clients who already like a particular designer, or they've worked with the designer before and want to post a private one-to-one project. Mm-hmm. You decide who you want to work with in those private projects. And if you just want to work a post a one-to-one project and work with an individual designer, we match you. So we give you typically 10 to 12 designers who are the best designers for your category, and you pick the one you want to work with. So okay. We can do some of that for you. We can help you find the one designer if you're looking for a one-to-one relationship, or we can help you work with a group of designers if you're looking for, you know, some variety, some ideas. This is something you just can't get anywhere else.
Super. Thank you. Don, back to you.
Okay. We're talking with Ross Kimberowski. Ross, your website again for our listeners?
Crowdspring.com, CrowdSpring.com, Crowdspring.com.
Well, you know, Dan, you covered an awful lot of ground that I wanted to cover, but I'm glad you did. But I guess my question is, have you, your designers won any awards working through your company?
So we've had some interesting experiences. I don't know if the designers have won awards directly, but I could tell you that we've worked with a lot of high-profile brands that have won a lot of awards. So, for example, just to give you a couple of examples, we've helped LG design their next mobile phone. We've helped Barilla design the next pasta shape. So we do a lot of product and product packaging design, which means we have a unique opportunity to have businesses that are looking to create products who are looking for computer-aided design, not just simple logos, and we've done that pretty effectively. Crowdspring has won a number of awards for our service, so the American Business Awards. We've won a lot of awards for our customer support. In fact, it's one of the things we pride ourselves about. We have one of the premier customer support teams in the world, and we perennially are at 98-99% satisfaction. We actually survey our customers every single time they have an interaction with us. So in a service industry, those of your listeners who run service businesses, you know how tough it is to impress 99% of your customers, and we've done this for 10 years straight.
One last question. What if a customer doesn't like what he or she has received? What happens then?
So we feel so confident about the products and services we offer, we give you a 100% guarantee. You're going to like the choices, you're going to like one of the choices, or you get all of your money back, including our fees. So it's we stand behind the product. We feel so confident that we have talented designers and so sure that we can deliver a better value for you than anybody else. We guarantee it with a no questions asked policy.
I've been impressed by the back and forth between you and Dan. Ross, one last time, your website, and we thank you so much for being with us.
It was great talking to you, Dan and Don. The website is crowdspring.com, CrowdSpring.com, crowdspring.com.
Thank you so much. A link to your website will be on recalculating.biz tonight, where you can hear this and every other program Dan and I have done over the years. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, guys.
Dan Perkins here for Recalculating for Small Business with your tip of the day. Should you belong to a local marketing network? One area of potential business is other small business owners through marketing networks. These groups usually meet once or twice a month for lunch and discussions. Sometimes the group will invite a guest speaker to talk about how they are building their brand. People in different businesses generally go and make up these groups. If you have a computer problem, perhaps one of the members of your group can fix your problem, or at least tell you about somebody they've used to fix their problems. Sometimes members of your group can use your product or services. So here's your Recalculating for Small Business tip of the day. Reach out and ask your fellow business friends if they belong to a marketing group. And if they do, tell them you'd like to go. Shop around and find a group or two that you like. You'll make new friends and maybe find new customers. This is Dan Perkins with your Recalculating Small Business tip of the day.
Well, we enjoyed the show today, and we encourage you to go to the website, as I said before, recalculating.biz, listen to last shows, and we're also going to start giving you some heads up about who's coming in the future. And we thank you for listening, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.